You're listening to the Fantrax Radio Network. Fantasy sports lives here.
Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
It's hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin, and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink the strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's the Nasty Cast. Hello, and welcome to episode 163 of the Nasty Cast, fantasy baseball podcast. I am Nathan Dockin, whom you can find on the Twitter at Nathan Dockin, joined by the vanliest Lee I've ever met.
Quite a booger, and it's really bothering me. So at some point, I may just blow my nose into the microphone and see how it sounds just for fun. I mean, this is the Nasty Cast, so, you know.
Do you have you've got a pop filter for your mic? Do you have a booger filter?
I need to get one. Before long, I'll have booger filters, spit filters, pop filters, you name it. So that way, it'll block everything out, and then you won't even be able to hear me, and everyone will be happy.
Absolutely, Ron Rigney, do you have a hair filter for your microphone?
No, because I have no hair. So
living dangerous.
I don't have any. I don't have any boogers either. I will say my elbow is bothering me though. I think I might need Tommy John.
Ouch.
Yeah.
You also have a coconut bra, which is important.
I do. Yes. Yes. I do.
This is actually true. We saw a photo.
You did.
Very disturbing.
Yes. You're welcome.
You might not want to mention Tommy John to Van, though, with Garrett Richards' recent unfortunate incident. He might be a little sensitive.
Yeah. That's true. Well,
His older collateral ligament might be sensitive.
Just a little. I'm conceding this season. I don't think the Angels are going to do anything. I mean, the Astros are 10 games up, even though the Angels are at 500. So that's just unfortunate they're in that division. But yeah, the Garrett Richards news was hard, but it's not completely unexpected. And I mean, we discussed this the other day. I think this was the right move just based on money and basically tendering him a contract. But I also think that it's just unfortunate. It'll be the short one. I hope he gets his career back on track, but I'm not certain. I mean, he's dealt with so many injuries. We'll see how he comes back from this. But he definitely won't be an Angel next year unless they sign him to a cheap 2-year deal like they did with Drew Smyly, the Cubs did.
Well, you won't be an Angel either. How's your UCL doing?
It's okay. The swelling's down, so that's when a lot of the pain goes away. But I'm still kind of gimpy. I can walk around, but I don't really think about it. But I'm certainly not going to be doing any sprinting anytime soon.
Oh, well, that's going to really slow down the podcast. We do a lot of sprints on this show. What's your favorite calisthenic? Tweet us at NastyCastPod. You can also find Van at ManleyVanley, and Ron is at TheRealMade. You can email us if you prefer to reach us that away. That is nastytraxpods@gmail.com. That is T-R-A-X. Let's see. Also, if you could give us a nice rate and review on iTunes, we will love you a long time. That helps us out quite a bit. And if you want to support the show in a different way, you can give us cold hard cash at patreon.com/nastypod. Thank you very much to all of those who have already contributed to that. I hope you're enjoying the Slack channel. We had a grand discussion about the home run derby last night. Which, of course, we made a wager on. Actually, Ron, I totally forgot about this until now. When are you paying off our Twins Rays bet?
I got to figure out. I thought Van was coming up with what the wager was.
I have something for you. It's not okay. Going to take place on this show. And, in fact, okay. I'll have to get together with you guys at some point. But I do have something for you. So I'm going to leave that mysterious for now. But hopefully next week it'll be prepared.
I am a man of my word. I will pay up for sure.
There we go. Yes, for the listeners out there who obviously don't know because we've never mentioned it on the show. Ron just brought up the other day because, of course, his Rays were playing my Twins and decided to make a wager on a game who no starters had been announced for as of the time. And it ended up being Fernando Romero, who I was really excited about when that was announced, but he sucked. And then it was Ryan Stanek for the Rays. So that game was like 4.5 hours.
Yeah.
And yeah, back and forth game. And of course, ended up with a walk-off grand slam from Brian Dozier.
Which was the day after the Rays lit up whoever it was. I can't remember who started for 19 runs. I don't think they scored 19 runs in the previous 12 games or something. So,
yeah, the Twins put Williams Astudillo on the mound, which is the highlight of the Major League season for me, as far as I'm concerned. But Brian Dozier will be seeing other fields very soon, unfortunately. So it was at least good to have that memory this year before he ends up getting traded somewhere. But anyway, if you want to listen to some more of our Dynasty ramblings, you can check out Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. And on today's show, we've got kind of a little bit of a shorter show, a little bit of a different show with the All-Star break going on right now. We're just going to go over some of our first half studs and duds, and we're going to close out the show with top closer handcuffs in advance of the impending trade deadline. And Van did some work at Fantrax HQ on the topic and also was on FNTSY talking about it. And it seems like a very good thing. You know, obviously, going to be a lot of closer movement around, you know, a couple weeks from now. And so you got to get out in advance of that. So we're going to start off, I guess, kick it off in the, with our first half studs and duds, shall we, gentlemen?
Let's do it.
And Van wrote his article on closers on Fantrax HQ, and I actually wrote an article about this on Razzball. And so that made my prep a lot easier for this show than normal. Where should I start? Oh, man. Let's see. Jesus Aguilar. Does that make sense?
Yeah, just a little bit of sense. Such a squat, thick little man, but yes.
Yes, okay. And so he makes sense because, you know, he was in the home run derby just last night. Did not fare particularly well, actually. He was slow and kind of terrible, but I mean he's been awesome through the first half. Just one of the huge breakouts of the season. And you know, kind of what we're doing with this segment is projecting into the second half what we think that they're going to do. And I think that this is just completely legit. So I'm full on buy mode with Aguilar. I think the price might even be a little bit lower than where it should be, just in case some of the owners like don't fully believe in this. You know, he's cut 4% off of his strikeout rate, and he used to be a lot better against lefties and just kind of okay against righties. But he's gotten a lot better against righties as well. So he's definitely, you know, especially considering his ADP, which was in the 600s according to Fantrax. Yeah, a lot of profit potential there. So he's definitely first half stud for me, and I think he'll keep it up in the second half. Van, who do you have?
Real quick on Aguilar, I just have one question. Who's happier, the Aguilar owners or the Max Muncy owners?
Oh, yeah. I think I would say Muncy just because he's done it in what at least seems to me like a more compressed time span. So, like, you've got such good numbers in an even shorter amount of time.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, definitely. And he's stolen a couple of bases, whereas Aguilar hasn't. But both guys, obviously, huge gets for their teams. So awesome for both of those. My first stud, I'm going to be a little bit of a homer here, and I'm going to go with Andrelton Simmons of the Angels. He's currently sitting eighth overall in F-War in the majors, not just the AL. His defense is largely what has fueled that excellent F-War. But offensively, he is proving that last year's improvements are pretty much legit. This year, he's hitting .313, .371, .443, has six homers and six steals. He's on pace for an 80-run, 80-RBI season as well. And based on his ADP and everything, he didn't really cost a whole lot. He's also only 28 years old, and he's not likely going to fall off a cliff at any point soon. Had a little bit of an ankle scare earlier in the season, but that hasn't affected him a whole lot. Still has 357 plate appearances, so he's going to put together a full season. And, I mean, suddenly we've got a 15-15 shortstop with a 300 batting average. And I can't say enough how important a 300 batting average is in this day and age, because we're seeing batting averages tank. So if you're playing in an average league, that's immensely valuable. And he's suddenly a guy that you can plug into your lineup and forget about because he's been that good. And also fascinating to note, 357 plate appearances, he has only struck out 4.5% of the time. That is insane in this day and age for someone to make that kind of contact and to have a decent season. Like, sometimes you'll see a guy do that and they're just not good. They're grounding out a lot, but no, he's having a good year. So I'm definitely all aboard the Andrelton Simmons train. We've seen him do this now for 2 years in a row, basically. 2 years ago, he was pretty solid, .281 average, a couple homers, a couple steals, but we've really kind of reached his peak, and I fully believe that he can continue doing this every year.
All right, I'm going to roll with a shortstop also. And you were talking about how Andrelton Simmons, which that strikeout rate of 4.5% is insane. I'm going to talk about a shortstop that's striking out at 24.3%, which is insane, but the opposite way. And it has a 6% walk rate as well. Now, I'm going to preface this too by this is a guy that I like. It's a guy that was dirt cheap, so that's one of the reasons I put him on here. And he's a guy that while he's top 10 at the position, I think that, you know, you're looking at him more maybe in a little bit of a deeper format as maybe a middle infield type. But if you do have to start him at shortstop, he's putting together decent numbers depending on how you built your team around him. And that's Tim Anderson of the White Sox. And, you know, when you look at average, when you look at OBP, 246 average, 302 OBP, so not a lot to like there. That's what I was kind of prefacing it by. If you can kind of build your team around him to be able to bump up and offset those a little bit, what he's giving you, he's got 21 steals already, which is tied for fifth in the majors. He's got 13 homers already, so a 2020 season, probably 2030 season, is easily within reach there. Now, he's not a huge power guy, obviously, but I think he can get to 20 homers. I think he can get to 30 steals, maybe more. He scored you 51 runs. Now, the thing about that that's kind of remarkable to me is he only had 72 all of last year in 146 games. But he's hitting usually about 7th or 8th. He's hitting in the bottom half of that, or bottom third of that White Sox lineup. And when we look at that White Sox lineup, it's not doing a whole hell of a lot. And so I think that's a little bit more impressive with the 51 runs that he has. He, like I said, he doesn't walk a whole lot. I'd like to see the walk rate obviously go up a little bit because that would kind of bump him up in the lineup. When you look at the lineup for the Sox, he's hitting down there along the likes of Omar Narvez and Adam Engel. I'd like to see him maybe a great spot for him would be kind of in between Moncada leading off and Abreu third, but obviously if he's not getting on base at a high enough clip, he's not going to be put there. But I think considering I got him in a couple auctions for I think a dollar, and I've added him as a free agent in a couple of leagues, especially at one of my more shallow leagues. I needed a shortstop. I added him I think 3 days ago, just kind of throw on my bench in case I need somebody for the stretch run here. But I think you got to like a guy that costs you a buck and could get you 20 homers and 30 steals.
Absolutely. Well, I am going to continue on with the shortstop trend. And I'm going to go with Asdrubal Cabrera as my stud number two. And a little less optimism for me on Asdrubal moving forward, but he does have a ridiculous 17 home runs already with a solid .281 average. He's always hit for average and like a little bit of power, but he's got absolutely no steals anymore. Age, you know, 32, so he's getting up there, and so that is expected. But the 17 home runs is not over a 200 ISO, 209 ISO right now compared to his 154 career mark. But you dig into it a little bit more, and you know it looks a little bit less likely that he's going to eclipse his career high of 25. He might get there just because he's got 17 already, but you know the 42% hard contact rate is encouraging, but you know it's still a 17% home run per fly ball rate. Nearly double his career rate of 9%. And he isn't really pulling the ball for more power. He's not hitting the ball in the air for more power. So it's not a launch angle thing. And that gives me some pessimism on him moving forward. So for me, Asdrubal Cabrera, while he was great for you in the first half, he'd be a sell high candidate for me heading into the second half.
Well, next up for me, I have to say that me and Lorenzo are rolling in a benzo. So Lorenzo Cain, of course, is who I'm discussing of the Brewers.
Is that a Will Smith lyric?
No, that's it's like Nelly. Is that right? No, Ice Cube, N.W.A. Me and Lorenzo rolling in the benzo.
I just thought, you know, given all the Will Smith talk in recent weeks, that maybe you're consistently just trying to roll in as many lyrics as you could.
that is a good guess. If it's not Phil Collins, I generally tend to leave it out of every episode at least. Anyway.
That's not Phil Collins?
Sadly, no.
Oh, yeah, that was actually a hidden lyric in Susudio.
Exactly. No, Lorenzo Cain, reports of his demise were a bit exaggerated. This season, he's pretty much rebounded to have a phenomenal year for the Brewers. Well, technically last year was the rebound. Through 351 plate appearances this year, he has 8 homers and 18 steals. That puts him on pace for about a 15-30-35 season. Slash line is .293, .393, .427, and it's fueled by a career-high 13.4% walk rate. He's 32, so I expect this to basically be his ceiling. But 2017's numbers, last year's numbers, 15 homers, 26 steals, that feels like what I would project for him. That's kind of what his middle ground would be, with this year being his ceiling. He did hit 300 last year, and there's no real reason to think that he can't keep doing that. I mean, he's athletic. He's done this in the past. He has kind of a history of it. So maybe not 300, but I could see him hitting, you know, 285 plus, which, like I said, with Simmons, that's immensely valuable in this day and age. Again, he's very, very athletic, so maybe the aging process will be a little bit slower for him. So I'm kind of optimistic for the next couple of years. Obviously, again, 32, he's probably going to be on the decline soon. Decline soon, but maybe it's not
from
going
the
to be.
South, you can go with decline.
Decline. It's not. I'm not from the South. I just live in the South.
You've been there long enough.
That's true. So maybe it won't be precipitous, but I do think he has a couple years worth of sustained success in his bat. Obviously, he's not driving in a lot of runs because he leads off, but he's scoring a lot. He's got 50 runs scored on the season. So I think the rest of the year he could keep up this pace, and then maybe next year, again, 15 homers, 25 steals, and a 285-plus batting average going forward.
Yeah, so my second guy here, I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to throw a pitcher out. And Van, this is a guy that is near and dear to your heart this season, and that's Tyler Skaggs. And it's another guy that one of the reasons I put him on here is because he was ultra cheap as far as adding him either off of waivers, or if you did spend a draft pick on him, it was a pretty low one. I think he's another guy, once again, in that same league that I got Tim Anderson for a dollar. I spent a dollar of fab on Tyler Skaggs, and it's really paid off for me as far as up to the midway point here, I guess. K per nine over nine is pretty solid. It's up above. It's about a K and a half more than his career rate. Strand rate is at 82%, so that's pretty solid. The thing I like about him, though, is, like I said, in addition to him costing me nothing, is all the metrics kind of point in the direction of there not being much of a regression here. You know, when you look at XFIP, XFIP still sitting at 3.37. Sierra is pretty close to that, I believe. If Sierra sits at about 3.49, yeah, let me bring it up here. Yeah, that's where it's at. So a lot to like here. I mean, like I said, he's a value guy across the board, and he hasn't really had a whole lot of starts that have been clunkers. He's been pretty good for the most part since you've been able to add him to your team. And, you know, for in that league that I picked him up for a dollar, we can keep up to 10 guys. And so for that, in that respect, keeping him for $2 heading into next year is going to be fairly solid. Now, I want to end this by, Van, I want to get your opinion, because I read this today that it looked like that Anaheim was not going to necessarily deal Skaggs or Heaney. What do you think about that? Do you think one or both of them gets moved?
I think the odds of them getting moved are slim. I'm not going to say they don't happen, but I think that they're going to ask for a lot for them because both guys have team control and they're both young and both succeeding. And not to mention the fact that the big reason that they're not, you know, doing better is that the rotation has been questionable. They've had a lot of injuries. So, I mean, I guess if they're going to contend next year, why would you trade away young pitching? So I think they hold on to them, and I hope they do because I like both pitchers. Now, I'm going to turn this around and ask both of you guys, who do you like more, Skaggs or Haney?
I think Skaggs for me, just and you know, that's what I went with on here. And I've had them both on various teams, but I think Skaggs to me, just with the pedigree of him, you know, being as high of a pick he was, as I try to remember, I think Heaney was a pretty high pick in the, was it the Marlins organization back in the day?
Yep.
I believe.
Yep.
I got to say I'm more of a Skaggs guy than I am a Heaney guy.
What do you think, Nate?
I agree. I should pull up my top 100, but I know I've at least got Skaggs, I think, in like my top 30, I want to say. And Heaney's in like the top 50, something like that. I actually just wrote Heaney up last week.
Well, because you think Heaney's not a weenie. So
that's right.
And that's about right. I mean, Skaggs has a better strikeout rate. I think they can both be similar in the ERA department, but I think Skaggs is going to be a little cleaner, I guess, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, three viable pitches, you know. So it's from a lefty. Very nice.
Tyler Skaggs.
It's on to me. Yes, one of my previous articles as well, Plant Your Flags with Tyler Skaggs. So I am a fan. Let's stick with the pitchers. I'm going to go with my final first half stud, and that is Mike Foltynewicz, whose name I hate to write, and maybe that's made me biased a little bit now. But it seems like with the comments that I get on Razzball a lot of time, like a lot of people seem to overrate Foltynewicz. They seem to have bought into him as a fantasy SP2 thanks to, you know, first half 266 ERA and a K per nine 10.62. That is all well and good, but there's regression is going to come, you know, that especially with the ERA. He's got a 2.54 BABIP and an over an 80% strand rate. And it's not like he's inducing a ton of soft contact to earn that or anything either. He's just about 35% hard contact with Foltynewicz there. And he walks too many guys, too. That's kind of always been his problem. And 3.72 walks per nine this year. He hasn't really improved enough to convince me that he has turned a huge corner yet. He has at least, the curveball changeup, he's using that approximately, was it like 15%, something like that. But he's still predominantly fastball slider. And turning over a lineup three times with, you know, just two primary pitches like that can be troublesome. And we saw that in his very last start where he cruised through six innings with just one hit. And then he just, melted down in the seventh inning, gave up five earned runs. And that pissed me right off. But, I don't think that he's terrible by any means. You know, the strikeouts are going to be nice, but I think he's more of a mid to upper threes ERA guy the rest of the way. And I'd be probably looking to sell high if somebody is buying into him as a fantasy number two.
Yeah, I'll second that too, because I wrote about him at Fantastics a few weeks ago. And when you look at his metrics, there's definite things that shoot up red flags immediately that call for regression in the second half. And I'm counting on him in a couple of leagues. So he's a guy, hopefully none of my league mates are listening. Wait, nobody really listens, so I guess it doesn't matter. But
yeah.
So I think I'm going to go out and shop him, but you're 100% dead on with that one.
Yeah, and what I'll say is I believe a little bit more in what Foltynewicz is doing as compared to his teammate, Sean Newcomb. I do not understand how Newcomb has a 3.51 ERA. Like, we talk about Foltynewicz walking too many people. Newcomb walks 4.5 per nine, and that's better than it has been in his career. He was at 5.13 last year, 5.15 the year prior. I guess that was all last season. But either way, I do not understand how a pitcher can walk five batters an inning and have a decent ERA. So I'm just waiting for him to implode. Foltynewicz is going to certainly have a higher ERA than this, but I think it's a little more sustainable than his teammate. Okay, moving on to my last guy. I am not going to go to the pitcher. I'm going to stick with offensive players. I have Jean Segura of the Seattle Mariners. You know, we're so far removed now from those really putrid 2014 and 2015 seasons that I can confidently say that Jean Segura is a great Major League Baseball player. Last year, he hit 300, 349, 427, had 11 homers, 22 steals, and he's largely continued that success and even improved upon some of those numbers this year. He's hitting 323, 354, 458 with 7 homers and 14 steals, so that means a 15-25 season is pretty much potentially in the books. And just like my other two guys, the batting average is real and immensely valuable in today's game. So he's also just 28 years old. There are several more good years ahead of him. I think he got kind of a overrated early on in his career because when he was called up for the Brewers, he had that really good season, stole 40-plus bases. And then he really kind of struggled for a few years with the 250 averages. And then suddenly he started to come back, hit the 20 home runs in 2016. And batted 257 steal. I'm sorry, 319 that year. So he actually got the average back up. And then, of course, last year 300. This year 323. So I think he's a very valuable player, and he's athletic and good enough that he's going to provide some value for the coming years as well.
Yeah, the only bad thing about him is his ass got too big, and that's limiting the stolen bases.
It happened to Justin Upton too. So yeah, happens to the best.
I guess guys just get the big butt.
Too many squats.
Combination of doing the squats, and then instead of like protein powder for the gains, you just eat donuts.
Yeah,
that donuts sounds good.
Delicious. Yeah, right. Yeah, so I'm gonna stick with a Seattle Mariner here, and this one was a fairly easy one, but I didn't want to not mention this guy because he is having a hell of a first half, and that's the Mariners closer Edwin Diaz. And it's one of these things that if you have Edwin Diaz, you obviously know what he's doing for your team. If you don't own him, I don't know if a lot of people really realize the insane numbers he's putting up. As far as when you look at the K per nine, he's averaging almost 15 Ks per nine. He's got 36 saves already. He had 34 all of last year. Stranded 76% of runners. FIP and XFIP both are lower than his ERA. His ERA checks in at 2.25. XFIP sitting at 1.87. He's averaging 98 with his fastball. Just all around doing all kinds of work for your team. He's not only giving you saves in that category, but he's also killing all your ratios too. Just 2.4 WAR. I mean, he's doing it all. He's number one closer, obviously, in fantasy. And if you're able to get him, you know, he wasn't too terribly expensive, and he's outperforming all the guys that were probably drafted before him, the Kimbrels and the Jansons of the world. And not to say that those aren't impressive guys that are giving you some numbers, but they're definitely not doing what Edwin Diaz is doing. So he's definitely knocking on that door to be one of those guys headed into next year. But Edwin Diaz was my third call here.
All right. That is going to wrap up the studs. Now let's move into the dudliness, shall we?
The spuds.
The spuds. Spuds. I love a good potato.
I love Spud Webb.
Now I want some poutine.
Can you say that on there?
It is poutine. The Nasty Cast. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, right. Okay. I forgot.
Put some gravy on it. let's see. Let's start off with Miguel Sano, my favorite.
Another fat boy.
Two twins on my list, but yeah, thick boy for sure. You know, it was not so long ago where we were just in the preseason, we were doing a little podcasting, and Miguel Sano came up, and we basically all kind of came to the conclusion that we're staying away from him this year because the warning signs were all there. He was coming off knee surgery in the offseason, and then there's that sexual harassment issue, which nothing ever even came from that, but it was still an issue in the preseason. But he was, you know, he showed up with the quote unquote generous carriage, as Paul Molitor so eloquently put. But, you know, there's a ton of swing and miss too, still like 30-35% strikeout rates in his past. Really, all that there was power and a huge ADP, and hopefully nobody else bought into that. Hopefully they agreed with us, because he has just been terrible and demoted, and now he's not even hitting in high A for any power off of a bunch of 19-year-olds. And there's just all kinds of, you know, that he was accused even last year of laziness and being too lackadaisical, and his attitude supposedly isn't too great. So he might be in the minors for a while, and so for that reason, I'm definitely not buying in on a second-half resurgence of any kind. But I wanted to pose this question to you. Do you think, like, are you still in the long term? Are you guys still buying Sano in Dynasty?
I think it would be worth a shot to see what the owner thinks of him. Because if you can get him for an inexpensive cost, and like, say you're my team in the Dynasty League, you're in 12th place, you're rebuilding, why not? Give that a shot. See if you can get a guy like that. You can plug him in your minors for now. You can put him on the bench, see what happens. And if the cost is low enough, then sure, you may strike gold. However, I'm not confident he's really ever amounts to a whole lot of anything. I mean, obviously the power is for real, but this is a guy, like you said, who strikes out 35% of the time. He's striking out 40% of the time. And I just don't think there's a real way to succeed all that much when you do that. Now, however, he is a really good walker. So if it's an OBP league, maybe you give him a little bit of a boost. Short answer is I'm not going to pay a lot for him, but if I can find out that the cost is really inexpensive, say maybe, I don't know, number 95 on the top prospects list, then sure, I'll give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, for me, it would depend upon if it's an already established dynasty. My argument's the same as Van. It would have to be a cheap get and just kind of see if, you know, you can find an owner that's ready to move on from his antics. But if it's a dynasty that we're starting from scratch and we're going to keep, you know, however many guys from here on out, he's not somebody I'm going to actively look to draft.
I think it's really enticing because he is a real buy low, right? Like, when will his stock ever be lower than it is now? I mean, I just pulled up his Fangraphs page, and it said that he was placed on the temporarily inactive list for high A Fort Myers yesterday. So maybe they've shut him down altogether. It just says for personal reasons. So not giving you the worm and fuzzies there by any means, but I do think that I would be sending out some offers just to see how low that I could buy him. Like, if you're looking at some overperformers, I mean, I don't think I would send Jesus Aguilar, but Max Muncy, would you rather have Max Muncy in Dynasty?
Yeah. I would, yeah, just because of how good Muncy's been. If Muncy were doing what he's doing, but 10% less or 15% less, then maybe I'd move him. But considering what he's done, I think you could probably, even if you're going to trade him, get a better piece back.
I'm just imagining time traveling back into the preseason to, like, talk to myself, like, hey, motherfucker. trade Miguel Sano for Max Muncy. And I just slap myself across the face and go back into my time machine.
You would be so puzzled.
I'd be horrified. And I don't think I would even do it.
Can I ask a question?
That's absurd. What?
Why would you talk to yourself like that?
I think if there was a duplicate of me, I would just be a total asshole to myself.
Okay.
And it would be hilarious. Both of us would laugh.
Indeed. All right. Well, I'm going to go on to my next guy, or my first dud, I suppose. And that is former Ray, Evan Longoria, the guy we all want to love but can't because he's bad now. Most fantasy players had basically tempered expectations, us included, for Longoria with his first season in San Francisco. But not many people expected this kind of drop off. He was drafted as number 170 overall and the 18th third baseman off the board, and he's really stumbled. He's got a 246, 278, 434 line, a career low 3.7 walk rate, which he doesn't walk a whole lot, but that's really bad for him, and only 10 home runs and 270 plate appearances. He also ended a run where he's had five straight seasons without missing any sort of, you know, large chunk of time. He's had 600 plate appearances every year for 5 years. Do you remember when he was an injury risk? That was a long time ago. He had hand surgery in June. He's expected back first week of August. Hopefully this time off will do him wonders, but I think we're really kind of on the twilight of his career. He's 32. His defense hasn't been very good, whereas in the past it was above average, if not just solid. I think he's going to give you some really light, empty power, but that's going to be the extent of it. I really don't see much of a resurgence for Evan Longoria at all.
Yeah, so sadly, I agree. One of those former Rays that Yancey Eaton and I both root for, because
awesome
there's
a
long list of those guys. So my first milk dud is going to be Jay Bruce. And not to say that I drafted Jay Bruce looking for insanely huge numbers, but, you know, Jay Bruce is a guy kind of in your later rounds that if he's sitting there, you know, he's got the first base. A lot of places he's got the first base outfield eligibility. But he's sitting there with 36 homers at the end of last year, 101 RBIs. You got to like those numbers. You know he's never going to give you high average because he's never done that. But when you look at 2018 Jay Bruce, you've got three home runs. You've got 17 RBIs. You've got a 212 average and a 292 OBP. And he's not really been a huge OBP guy either. But considering he finished last year at 324, he's definitely down in that category as well. He's battled some injuries, but just hasn't been anything that you thought he would be. I mean, you can usually pencil him in, if nothing else, for 30 homers. I'd say probably about 80 to 90 RBIs and a respectable average, not, you know, 212. So he's my first guy up there by far. You just look at the metrics. You know, he's only got a 261 BABIP, only a 108 ISO, which, you know, his career number is 219, so that's way down. But Jay Bruce is a guy that luckily you didn't spend a lot on him because you could cut bait with him kind of early, and I don't think he's anywhere near being a buy low guy. I think he's a guy that, you know, maybe take another shot on him next year because he is only 31, but I don't think you want to go out and actively look to add Jay Bruce.
No, I would actively look to avoid Jay Bruce.
Yes.
He's cooked. So my next dud is going to be, this is how my season has gone, Byron Buxton. Mm-hmm. Really excited for him in the preseason, really excited for the twin season overall, but you know, when I was writing up my studs and duds over at Razzball, and Van, if you're feeling really like you're wanting to overachieve, maybe in the show notes for the podcast, you could even link to it. But, you know, I try to avoid my duds being injury related, you know, because that would have been easy to fill a page with just a bunch of guys who had, you know, like Corey Seager had Tommy John surgery, bust city. But Byron Buxton, like, it's partially a bust because of the injuries, but it's also partially not, just because when he was supposedly healthy this last time, they just optioned him back to the minors because he was striking out nearly 30% of the time once again, and just not hitting for any kind of average, just looking lost at the plate, and then really all you have is the speed and the defense, and they want more out of him than that. So as a total first half dud, you've got pretty much nothing out of him. As far as the second half goes, I'm not buying him for the second half. And he's a guy who gets a lot of interest. I mean, obviously, he's seen the highs. He was the top-rated prospect for a long time. But there's been just too many lows. And right now, just again, pulling up his Fangraphs page, he was placed on the minor league DL due to a strained wrist as of 3 days ago. So, fun. He's hurt again. And that just seems to be something that has followed him throughout his career. hopefully, you know, he can get past that. But right now it's not looking great. So, again, I think that, you know, I'm not buying in redraft. I don't know. You guys can say if you are. But in Dynasty, are you buying Byron Buxton?
I will say no. I'm out. I think I'm going to need to see some prolonged success before I really buy into it. Now, that said, this is all based on cost. I mean, if I get offered Buxton for nothing, yeah, obviously you're going to do it as long as you have a roster spot.
If you could, because another guy who was on my first half studs was Matt Kemp. If you could trade Matt Kemp to a competing team right now and get back Byron Buxton, are you doing that?
I would do that, absolutely. Because Kemp, I mean, do any of us believe Kemp is going to continue doing this? Maybe he can, no. But he's also in his, you know, mid to late 30s, so no thanks. So, yeah, I would do that, certainly. Now, let me ask this, too. Well, no, let Ron respond. Let's hear what he has to say.
Well, it's, I mean, as far as the Kemp thing, I would do that as well, because if you're doing that move, you're especially somebody that's down far in the standings in a dynasty, who's going to help you more in a dynasty format if you're losing? So, yeah, I would definitely try to get what I could for Kemp. But, yeah, I'd probably do that just because Buxton's going to pay off more for you in a dynasty format than Kemp is just for this year or two. Like Van said, is he really going to do that pass this year? I don't know, but even so, his value's never been higher than it is right now. So hopefully you can get more than Buxton for him. But yeah, I would probably do that as well.
Yeah, I would assume that the cost would be much higher. It would, at least for me, from being a Byron Buxton owner. I would still hold him in rather high regard, I guess. You know, he's still just 24, and the prospect fatigue has come and gone and come again, and now he's not a prospect anymore, and it's just fatigue. It's, you know, the potential is still there, 24 and a half years old. If you are going to get the profit from him, now is when you do buy. You know, it's not after he's been, the 16 home run, 29 stolen base guy for another season. It's right now when his stock is just in the tank. So I think in Dynasty it's worthwhile, particularly if you're out of contention, just kicking the tires with the Buxton owner and see if he's sick of the bumpy ride, because he or she very well could be.
Yeah. Now, let me ask this, too. You mentioned you weren't interested in a redraft league for the second half. As a Twins fan, too, do you expect him to get playing time? Do you expect him to play the rest of the season? Or do you think they'll keep him in the minors for a while?
They should keep him in the minors until they have an actual plan with him, because they've been screwing with him consistently ever since he's been up in the major leagues and back down in the minor leagues. And it's been a roller coaster for the last couple of years. But, you know, he's got a leg kick. Leg kick's gone. Leg kick's back. Nobody knows, you know. And how is the guy supposed to continually improve when you've got that kind of instruction? You just try this. No, try this a couple weeks later. Like, how are you supposed to get any confidence in yourself when you don't know what the hell you're doing and you're getting mixed messages? So I think it would serve him best to just stay in the minor leagues until he's healthy now, but until they have a certified plan and he's just raking in the minors, he's got his confidence built up. You know, we've seen him be a guy who is prone to lagging in confidence, like the beginning of last season when they opened the season and he was hitting in the three hole, Paul Molitor putting all the pressure in the world on him. And he started off like, you know, 1-for-41 or whatever the hell it was. You know, he admitted that he was in his own head. And so if you just let him succeed in the minors, build that confidence back up, bring him back up, just have him hit ninth for the rest of the season and then go from there, you know, next season. You know, and as far as fantasy value goes, whenever he's up, he's got a ton of value. If you're in a roto league where you stolen bases, actually count for something, like if you're in a points league or something like that, which typically devalues steals, then you're probably not even going to be too interested in him at all the rest of the year. But he's always going to be a stolen base threat whenever he's up. So, he's worth an add if he does come up at some point, but I'm not entirely confident that he does until maybe September.
Very fair. I definitely can get behind and agree with that. All right, I'll move on to my next guy, and that's another young player. It's Scott Kingery, Sean Connery's favorite.
Scott Kingery.
our listeners may remember, I was a bit of a wet blanket on him when it came to Scott Kingery at the outset of the season. I thought the power spike last year was very questionable, and I was wary of how he would be able to perform in the majors considering his low walk percentage and semi-questionable hit tool. I was, of course, right, which is usual. And he's put up a 237.
You're going to need Tommy John patting yourself on the back on that one.
237.
Tear rotator cuff.
282, 338. He has four homers, eight steals, and 341 plate appearances. So they're still playing him, obviously. I did not pony up for him, but at pick 276, you still invested a little bit in him. And some names going around pick 276 at that point include Wilson Ramos, Brandon Belt, David Peralta, Max Kepler, Jose Martinez. All of these guys are performing way above what Scott Kingery is doing. And that basically just shows you why you should be cautious when drafting, say, these younger players or players who have had, you know, maybe a breakout that's somewhat questionable. I mean, no one expected power from him at all to the level that it happened last year, 26 home runs and almost 600 plate appearances. And sure enough, I mean, he's definitely not doing it. Now, that doesn't mean that he's worthless or his career's over. I think he can still be a viable, decent major leaguer. But to me, he's a 10 home run, I don't know, 25 stolen base guy when he starts hitting his peak. But I don't know if that's going to be next year. I don't know if that's going to be the second half of this year or the year after. So it's questionable as far as that goes. But definitely look at your players, and if they've got that huge breakout, analyze why it happened and whether or not you believe it and make decisions based on that. He was the trendy name at the beginning of this year, one of them, and it sure didn't pan out. So hopefully, if you did draft him, you've got a backup, and if you didn't draft him, it worked out for you.
Yeah, if you took him, he was so cheap that he was fairly easy to replace. But I think that what he really needs is in his locker, which I know, like in the dugout, they probably don't have the locker doors like I'm picturing in high school. But when you open it up, I think he should have a door. So when you open it up, there's like a little sound effect. And it's Sean Connery saying, "You're the man now, Scott Kingery."
That would maybe really boost his
maybe
confidence.
Maybe a Zardoz exactly. poster, too.
Yes. Would be good. Yeah. With his guns. Sure. Yeah. Maybe you should just wear that little Speedo thing when he plays.
That could be like a couple weeks ago when they did those turn the clock forward uniforms.
Yeah.
Did you see those? Maybe the Phillies could rock some Zardoz because they could be like a throwback turn the clock forward both, you know?
Yeah, really covers it. Well, it was like Felix Hernandez like tucked in half of his jersey or something like that. It was really weird.
Those were just all around terrible.
D. Gordon had he took the sleeveless look with the backwards head and the gold chain.
He did that. Yeah. I'm going to look that picture up. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah. All right. So my second Dudley on the list is a guy that kind of depending upon how you look at it, you know, you're getting a little bit of production from, but a guy that I think that is frustrating me more than anything, and that's Joey Gallo. And you know Joey Gallo is going to hit. You know he's going to strike out, and that's about what he's going to do. But when I was drafting him in the leagues that I got him in, I was hoping that he could be the guy that had the 333 OBP last year. He only hit 209 last year, so I didn't really target him in any batting average formats. I targeted him in a couple of OBP formats because I was thinking if the guy can get me 40 homers and have an OBP right around 330, that's not all that bad. And so we know that the K rate is going to be around 36, 35%. That's what it's always been. You know the walk rate is going to be high. He walks quite a bit, so that's always a positive thing. But that's down a little bit this year. And, you know, even though you are not targeting him in a batting average league, he's still only hitting 187. The OBP is still under 300. He does have 22 homers. He does have 51 RBIs, which is nice counting stats. He's even swiped three bags. But it just kind of speaks to how first base is – and Vanya, I think you tweeted this out today. We were talking about this last night because we were curious about the AL first baseman after we saw that Abreu was the starter when you look at that lineup. And, you know, just the wasteland that first base has kind of become – especially in the AL, and Gallo kind of contributes to that. Now, it's very possible he could finish with 35, 30 homers. He could hit you 90 RBIs, but if he's hitting under 200 and he got an OBP under 300 like he does, I don't know if that's necessarily worth it. I think he's really starting to kind of hurt me in a couple places where I wasn't able to really put my team around him to kind of offset those numbers because I didn't expect them to be that low. So it's a guy that definitely I'm disappointed in. I mean, you know, like you said, he's giving you some counting stats, but when you look at especially the OBP, he's a guy that's really killing me in that regard.
Joe Rooster.
Yes.
Gallo is Spanish for rooster.
Yes. Wouldn't it be Jose Rooster?
I guess it would be Jose Rooster. Yeah, that's true. But also, D. Gordon looks like a guy.
That's not right, by the way.
What?
Pollo is Spanish for chicken.
Chicken. I said rooster.
Oh.
Gallo is
they really
gallo.
Differentiate that much? Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, chicken and rooster are two different words, aren't they? You're like, no, Spanish clearly only has one word for feathered bird. But Dee Gordon,
there's
by
a lot
the way,
of there's a lot of Spanish spoken where Nate's from, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Way up there. Dee Gordon looks like a guy you would find at a pickup basketball game when he was wearing this uniform. It's amazing.
Speaking of skinny little fast guys, Billy Hamilton is my third dud of the first half. And 22 stolen bases. That's tied for fourth in baseball, so it's obviously good, but not when considering that it's Billy Hamilton. And that's what you got him for, is to lead the league by a mile in stolen bases, because he gives you nothing else. And at least there's the time of writing this. He was hitting .233 and, you know, no power at all. He's not giving you anything, really. The runs are there on occasion, but he's just killing you in so many categories that when you're getting 22 steals, so he's on pace for, you know, 40-ish, that's just not enough to make up for not only the draft position, but, you know, just the negatives that he's getting you in home runs and RBI and batting average. So I'm not targeting him in the second half. Unless I'm just desperate for steals, like if I'm just rocking all of the other offensive categories and I can afford to take the hit with him and he can just, you know, pick me up some steals. Obviously, there are people I would prefer, but if Hamilton is cheap enough, then that is a strategy in a roto league. But it is also worth noting that he could be getting the red light a lot more from Jim Riggleman after he took over. So that might be partially to do with why Billy Hamilton is running less. And, you know, Riggleman isn't going anywhere in the second half. He's still going to be there. Who knows? He'll probably find a new manager next year, but next year doesn't help you any over the second half. And so I'm not really too optimistic on Hamilton all of a sudden going on a huge binge and recouping all of his value.
Definitely agree with that. If he's not stealing 55 plus bases, the rest of the stuff is enough to negatively affect you. So there is a little bit of value, but it's just not very much. And I've always kind of been wary of Billy Hamilton, but I'm definitely out on him right now.
Tough to steal if you can't get on base, too.
Indeed. All right.
That doesn't help. Yeah.
Speaking of stolen bases, my next guy, Manny Margot from the San Diego Padres organization. He was a former top prospect shipped out to San Diego from the Boston Red Sox. He's now pretty much an afterthought. There's still, of course, plenty of time for the 23-year-old to get his together, if you will. But right now...
Oh, I will.
Not... Yeah.
I cannot.
Not doing so hot. He's in a crowded outfield. They have a couple guys coming up now. Some trades may alleviate that whenever we get closer to the trade deadline. But right now he's hitting .243, .306, .364. And he's not even showing the middling power that he displayed last year when he hit 13 homers in 529 plate appearances. He only has 3 home runs and 308 plate appearances this year. So even last year's mediocre power isn't attainable. So he's never really also translated his stolen base prowess into success in the majors. And he only has 7 steals, and that's a potential career low for him this season. With more exciting options, not only in the majors, but also on his team, he's just kind of an afterthought. Now, like I said, he is young, so there's still some potential there. Again, remember, this was a top prospect at one point or another, but he just has not shown enough to tell me that he's going to be a viable major leaguer. I just really expected him to hit for a decent average, and he just hasn't. Last year at .263, this year .243. I would expect him to succeed to hit .280, and it just hasn't come. So unless the power spikes up and the stolen bases in particular come up, he's just going to be a guy that I'm going to avoid until I see something a little bit better.
All right, I'm going to go with another young outfielder that needs to get his shit together, and that's that's Lewis Brinson.
I mean, we could have just called this segment, like, dudes who got to get their shit together.
In parentheses, we could have put, if you will. Because, you know, we will, for sure. Lewis Brinson, and a lot of the things that you said about Manny Margot, Vanner, I can kind of echo with Lewis Brinson, a guy that was so good in AAA before he got dealt to the Brewers in the Yelich deal, and he hasn't done a whole hell of a lot this season. I mean, he's just disappointed. Now, he is only 24, and there is still plenty of time, but he's a guy that I really liked as far as, you know, being handed some playing time, and I don't think I expected, you know, huge all-star type numbers, but I definitely didn't expect a 186, 232, 338 slash. Now, the one thing I do like that the Marlins have done, and this is, and I kind of thought about this, Nate, when you were talking about Byron Buxton, is I do like the fact that they've kind of just left him alone. They've let him play. They've let him kind of fall on his face, and they're hoping that he kind of figures it out. And once again, they can afford to do that because we all know the Marlins are not necessarily going anywhere. However, I am amazed at the amount of wins they have, and they do have more wins than the Orioles and the Royals at this point as well. So, guy that I'm still in on, I think he does make for kind of a nice buy low. I just wouldn't pay a whole hell of a lot for him, but I think he could be good. I also kind of wonder if maybe he's kind of freaked out by that weird ass Florida Dolphin thing that goes off when they do hit when they hit home runs out there. I guess it's not when the other team hits home runs, but it doesn't go off all that much because they don't hit a lot of home runs. But
he's been scared. He doesn't want to hit home runs because he doesn't want it to go off.
That's exactly, yeah, because he plays out in the outfield there, and he's maybe afraid it's going to swallow him up. I don't know. That could be something, but yeah. So he's
better
a wild.
Watch that upcoming movie Megalodon.
You better not.
It looks so bad.
I know. Oh, I want to see it so bad.
The Meg.
It looks
is the
terrible.
I think
what
he's
is
actually
the
I think
Meg.
He's actually in it. He's actually
oh yeah,
there.
The Meg. Yeah, I forget who is in it, but I've
Jason Statham.
I'm like
Statham.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with Megalodon. Like I want it to exist so bad. So I just want for that reason I want to go to the movie. And also, it looks like just stupid fun.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I watched Skyscraper with The Rock the other night, which was atrociously bad, but also, you know, a campy action flick, so it was fun. But that movie was a preview in it. And it was also a preview on Solo. So I've seen that trailer twice in two different movies in the span of a month. So it's kind of pumped up for me as well.
Yeah.
Did you have anything? We totally railroaded you, Ron.
No, there's nothing else that can be said, you know. So, yeah. Do you guys agree that Brinson is a buy low guy?
To an extent, yeah. I mean, who would you rather have, Buxton or Brinson? I think it's Buxton, but I still like Brinson to an extent. I was in a buy mode at the beginning of this season, and I got him in several leagues for next to nothing, but I also expected him to struggle, but not this bad. I thought maybe a 230 average with some power and some speed, but he just, I mean, hitting 180 is atrocious. So he's going to have a long uphill climb. He's got all the talent in the world, but it's just not coming together right now.
Well, and I think in the comparison of those two, one of the things too, if you invest in Buxton, we've seen if he does kind of fall on his face, you're still going to get maybe a handful of steals. Brinson doesn't steal bases, and so if he's not performing at the plate and he's not hitting home runs, he's not driving in runs, he's not going to steal you a whole hell of a lot of bases. So I think I go with Buxton there too, but I'm not totally out on Brinson either.
Yeah, I guess that's my opinion.
Fair enough.
I would be. I think that he can be good, but I think it's going to be a long wait. Like I could see him being one of those age 27 breakouts, and then we all go, "Oh, finally!" You know. But like in the meantime, it's going to be really hard to hold on to him in dynasty leagues.
I'll say after we've dropped him to waivers and traded him for absolutely
nothing. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
And it's funny because that's exactly what I've said about Buxton for a while. I said it may be until he's 27 that it finally clicks. So similar kind of guy, toolsy, athletic, but obviously Buxton has a different level with his stolen base prowess.
Yeah, similar approach issues as well. But yeah, definitely, at least you've got that stolen base floor with Buxton. All right, that was way too much actual information and not enough buffoonery in the first half. Let's take a break here, come back on the flip side, and just totally reverse that.
It's a nice day for a nasty wedding. It's a nice day to start again.
Welcome back to the Nasty Cast, everyone, and it is time to talk closer goodness because there will be a flurry of trades, supposedly anyway. It's shaping up that way. There always is, right? So one of the positions that is seeing the most turnover in this time of year is obviously the saves, the closer position. A lot of closers will go to be setup men elsewhere, and somebody else has to step in and get the saves where the player came away from. And so I guess we'll just kind of go around the horn here like we did in the last segment, and I'll just kick it off with probably the most obvious one. Zach Britton is who I'm handcuffing. He's my number one guy because, we're going to see that. Oh, Lord, I can't even think of his name now. I'm
right back.
Yes. So. Yeah. So he's going to get moved. And so Breck will be my handcuff. Yeah, not Britton.
Do you think Breck definitely gets the job, or do you think maybe they give it to Givens? What do you expect to see out of that?
They went with Breck before. I think that they'll go back to Breck.
Yeah, I agree with that. My guy is in Detroit, and this is another obvious one, and that's Joe Giménez. He's last year really, really sucked. This year, he showed that potential, and he's striking out 10 per 9, 2.51 walks per 9, so he's really improved in that regard, 2.72 ERA. Shane Green is going to get moved, and he just returned from the DL, so it's perfect timing. He'll get a couple of games here to pitch, and somebody's going to take the bite on him, and Giménez is the closer of the future for the Tigers. So I foresee Giménez being a guy that, if you own him, you've got a closer for the next several years. I don't think he's going to be shuffled out of the closing job much, if at all. So I definitely expect him to hold the job for a while. And he's definitely a big target for me in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, and to kind of speak to the Orioles thing real quick, too, is I'm not all that certain that Brad Brock might not get moved, too. So, well, I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of chatter about that. But I think there's an outside chance they both might get dealt just because the Orioles are so bad. And so I think Givens might be the guy. Especially if Brock's already gone in your league, I'd definitely scoop up Givens because I think they could both be moved. Mine is going to be Jace Fry for the White Sox just because Joaquin Soria is about the only thing that they have of value. He doesn't really fit into the rebuild that they're trying to carry out. And we talked about the White Sox bullpen a lot. And like I've always said, I think that they're just trying to showcase some guys so maybe they can move them. And I think he's the one that gets sent out because he has gotten a little bit better since we've talked about how their bullpen was kind of in a state of flux. So Jace Fry is a guy that I think you might want to look at as well.
Yes. And he's put up some really good numbers this year.
Yeah.
So let's see. My number two was Joe Giménez. So moving on to my number three, then I'm going to go with Trevor Hildenberger. Unfortunately, a lot of twin stock out of me today, but they're looking like sellers, and Fernando Rodney could very well be on the move, and Edison Reed is on the disabled list. And so that leaves probably Trevor Hildenberger as the next in line. And he has been, you know, we were just actually texting back and forth about this recently. Paul Molitor's bullpen usage, and this came up because Fernando Rodney, they actually used him in like the fifth inning or whatever in that series against the Rays. And everybody was, oh my God, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. Well, so forward thinking of him to use him in this fireman situation, you know, is very high leverage. And it was because he had to, you know, leave the actual building to go become a U.S. citizen. So for the stupidest reason ever. And it just makes, like, I was so not shocked when I heard that, because Molitor is the least forward-thinking manager in bullpen usage ever, and one of the things that he has a habit of doing is just, he's got these, like, three or four guys that he just will ride the piss out of, and even in low-leverage situations, like, there was, I think they were up, you know, like, 12-6 in the ninth inning of some game, and they still brought in Ryan Pressly, you know, for no apparent reason. You could have had your bottom, you know, whatever, it pisses me off. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that Hildenberger has been used and abused already, so there's a very good chance that he'll be on the disabled list with Addison Reed soon enough. But he is, I believe, the next in line to get saves in Minnesota, and so I would be handcuffing him right quickly.
Hildenberger, the most delicious reliever there is. Burgers. My number two guy was actually Jace Fry, so I'll move on to my number three guy, and that is Drew Steckenrider of the Marlins. He has had a pretty solid season, and ultimately the Marlins are going to sell because they're the Marlins. I don't care how many games they win, they're still going to sell. They could be sitting at, you know, 12 games over 500, and I think they would still be sellers because they're such cheapskates. Even with this fancy new ownership, they're just, don't even get me started. But
it's Derek Jeter. It's Derek Jeter, man.
He's Derek Jeter, and he's finally here. He's going to take the team all the way this year. Derek Jeter.
Oh, the Derek Jeter song, it comes back. Yeah, so let's move on. Drew Steckenrider. I think, obviously, Kyle Barraclough is going to be moved. He's been pretty good, and he's healthy, so he's the closer right now. There's even talk that I just blanked on his name, the Brad Ziegler, the sidearmer. He's probably going to get moved. I know the Dodgers had interest in him. And even if he didn't, I think Steckenrider's the guy who's going to get the job. Through 42 and two-thirds innings, he has a 10.55 K per nine. Walks are a little high at 4.22, but as a reliever, you can do that and get away with it. 3.38 ERA, and FIP likes him at 2.96. So he's got the talent level and the repertoire to do it. He's 27 years old, big fastball, and he's the guy I'm going to target in that bullpen for the rest of the year for sure.
Yeah, my number two was Joe Jimenez. So, and then I had Jace Fry. I talked about him. I kind of thought outside of the box on this last one, and I think this will happen just because I think it's what the team wants to happen, not necessarily because of a trade. And that's Jordan Hicks. And Jordan Hicks is, if he's still out there in your leagues, I'd probably scoop him up if you're speculating on saves. Not to say that Bud Norris hasn't been good, because he has. And you know, we talk about. We talked about this bullpen before and the moves that they made, and you know, the amount of money that they threw out there for Greg Holland, and Greg Holland has a 7.99 ERA, so that kind of backfired. But Bud Norris ended up being one of the best signings of the free agent period, and I don't think they'll move him, but it wouldn't shock me if they pull a little swap here and put Jordan Hicks in that ninth inning role, just because I think his stuff profiles a little bit better. He is still really young, and I would have thought he would have had a higher K per nine just with the kind of stuff that he has, but he's also walking a few too many guys. So if he can kind of harness the control a little bit, I think he might be a guy that you might be able to get a few saves out of down the stretch.
I'm kind of wary of Hicks because of how straight that fastball is. Until he gets a little bit of movement on it, I'm going to be a little cautious. Now, that doesn't mean he can't succeed as a closer. I mean, he still has a 3.56 ERA, but I think it's limiting him from becoming an elite level relief pitcher, just the fact that that fastball is so super straight.
He did have a good tweet the other day. I don't know if you guys saw it, Jordan Hicks, but he said something along the lines of, "Hey, MLB, how about next year a velo derby?"
A what? Oh, velocity derby.
Velocity derby.
I got it. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
Because he throws hard. You see.
Yeah, he would win. Well, maybe. Aroldis Chapman and Hunter Green, which we'll talk about on the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Show. I will, anyway.
Oh, will it? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, a little preview there.
I will also.
All righty. Just like popped into my head how, like, I think in the KBO or something like that, their all-star festivities include like a bunting challenge.
That's
they have
awesome.
Targets that they bunt balls. It actually looks really, it's kind of fascinating. I would like to see that make its way over here, but I might get stoned just because I said the word bunt. You know, hashtag never bunt out there. But I mean, we've gone over my top three guys: Britton, Jimenez, and Hildenberger, or Brock, I guess. Jimenez and Hildenberger. The only other, and you guys can bring up any others that you have that you're interested in, but the only other one that really came to mind as far as somebody or a situation that has someone good enough to actually worry about handcuffing is Ron Urias. Seems like they're going to move Sergio Romo, and so the next in line would either be Diego Castillo or Ryan Stanek, and I think I would probably lean Stanek in that one. So he would be probably the only other one that I have any interest in. Is there any other situations that you guys think are actually worth pursuing?
Well, not necessarily handcuff. This is a guy that I want to discuss, and I mentioned this in my article, which I'll also link to in our description. Brad Hand. The Padres signed him to that 3-year deal with a fourth year valued at an option at $10 million. I believe that they signed him to be their long-term closer, and unless they get blown out of the water with an offer, I don't think they're going to move him. So if you're in a league where the Brad Hand owner, maybe you send out a feeler for him and see if he's worried that he might get traded to, say, the Cubs, where they already have Brandon Morrow who's succeeding. And so maybe he sells him for a little bit cheaper, because I think Hand is a top five closer, and I firmly believe he's going to stay on the Padres. So I think Yates probably gets moved over Hand, but that's definitely a guy that I'm going to put some feelers out and see if I can get him for cheap.
Yeah, just sticking with the Rays bullpen, just because they have so many options. One guy that I might not forget about either is Diego Castillo. He's a guy that I've read about that they might hand the job to. But you know, just with the bullpen being in such a fluid situation, and them using that essentially as a collective starter, it's kind of like a bullpen Voltron every fifth day, I guess. he's another guy I would look at. But yeah, Ryan Stanek's the guy that I like in that bullpen the most by far.
All right. Well, there we go, folks. There's our All-Star Break episode. Before we get out of here, we got to get our plugs out, man. So, Van, what you got coming out this week?
I just wrote my article for Fantrax, and I already forgot what it was about, so I'm pulling it up right now. Oh, yeah, trade deadline predictions. So I went over, and I wrote it like 4 hours ago, so that shows you how bad my memory is. But I predict where a couple of guys who I think are going to be on the move are going to end up. Manny Machado is obviously a big one. I didn't even mention him because we already know he's on the move, most likely the Dodgers. But I talk about Mike Moustakas, JT Realmuto, J.A. Happ, Cole Hamels, guys like that. So check that out on FanGraphsHQ.com. Of course, you can also find me on the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Podcast, which we do, and we'll record immediately after this one and comes out tomorrow, which would be today if you're listening to this. And lastly, I also do the Launch Angle Podcast, which we are skipping a week. Jeff is in Las Vegas, and Rob is Canadian, and that's the only excuse you need to skip a week. So we're going to do that since no baseball's going on. We'll be back next week and be good to go.
Yeah, I don't have a whole hell of a lot this week, to be honest with you. With the break coming up, no Fantastics. We're taking a week off from the Consistency Football Podcast. So I guess my only thing, we got the Dynasty podcast coming up, like you mentioned, Van. And go get the Fantasy Football Consistency Guide. Use the promo code Doyle. Do it.
There you go. It. Doyle rules. Yes. Yep, and I've actually got the same exact stuff coming up. So, yeah, the Dynasty podcast we're recording next, and then Fantrax HQ is my – I'm going to do a first-half version of my Fire and Ice, and then two-star pitchers are going to be back on Saturday on Razzball, and then Sunday you can find my top 100 starting pitchers. And until next week, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.